Hello and welcome to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters hopes to increase your ecological intelligence by bringing you news and reports from around the world.
Some of what our research over the last couple of years has revealed is that the thing about freight is that it's sort of the responsibility of every division within government, but there's often not a single owner of freight policy. And so this seems to be true whether you look at the city level, whether you look at the provincial level, and whether you look at the national level. And I mean, it makes sense because goods movement is both a part of economic growth. It's a part of how we use our roads. It's also a part of, you know, environmental policy. And so it seems that many people have a small mandate to work on it, but not a lot of policymakers are really tasked with thinking about freight exclusively.
That's Lindsay Wigginton, Managing Director for Transportation and Urban Solutions for the Pembina Institute, a nonprofit organization that provides research, analysis, and recommendations to inform policies and practices related to energy. Let's start off by talking about Pembina a little bit, or Pembina a little bit, and some of the different things that they do, and their focus basically is reducing the negative impacts of fossil fuels while supporting the transition to a clean energy system. So talk to us about Pembina.
You bet, and you touched on one of the great mysteries about Pembina right off the bat is how do you pronounce it? It is Pembina. We're named after a region in Alberta, actually, where we have our roots. So around 30 years ago, there was actually a blowout of a sour gas well in rural Alberta, and there was a group of citizens that came together to say, you know, this industry is the source of employment in our region, but we think it can be done better and in more environmentally sound ways and in ways that protect the public better. And that group of citizens did a lot of work to change some regulations around oil and gas development in Alberta. And since that time, we've really grown, expanded both our geographical reach and our subject reach. So the mission you outlined is exactly that. We look to forward clean energy solutions in Canada through research, through what we call convening, so bringing together different actors to have important conversations, and also through providing perspectives, so whether that be participating in public dialogue or speaking to the media about the policy solutions that we're really excited about. So we are a nonprofit organization. We're national, so we have offices in Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, and Ottawa, and we're a staff of about 50 people, and as you mentioned, I work in the Toronto office, and we're about a dozen there, and the way that Pembina's work is structured right now is that we tend to work on different sectors of the economy in our different regions. So our Transportation and Urban Solutions program, for which I'm the managing director, has always been based out of Toronto. A lot of the work we've done has been focused on how we can sort of better build out the Greater Toronto and Hamilton region in such a way that will help us usher in a low-carbon future, especially related to transportation. And it's exciting to work on that there because it is Canada's biggest and sort of fastest-growing metropolis, and we do think that the lessons are relevant across Canada. That being said, on our Transportation and Urban Solutions team, and I know we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but we also have a program around bringing down emissions from goods movement or from freight, and that work is quite national in scale. So we work sort of at the level of the federal government, provincial governments, and more locally in terms of city building as well. So just, I guess, quickly back to Pembina, my team is Transportation and Urban Solutions, but we also have programs working on renewable energy, responsible fossil fuel development, clean economy, green buildings, and some folks working on renewables in remote communities as well. So we really do try to cover the different sectors of the economy that need to look to ways of reducing emissions and adapting to sort of future realities.
Right. Now, Pembina has quite a as you say, a number of staff. The expertise is quite impressive. Your particular area, you're a registered planner, you studied civil engineering, and you have a master's degree in urban planning, which is all good. And give me an idea of the level of expertise of some of the other people and what they're working on.
Sure. So yeah, as you mentioned, we have a really interesting mix, I think, of expertise at the Pembina Institute. My team, including myself, does have urban planners on staff, which I think is really exciting because that's not always the case in the environmental sector, although increasingly it's moving in that direction. But I think sometimes the urban planning discussions that are happening and the more sort of environmental policy discussions that are happening are not always married. And so it's really exciting to be working in the environmental nonprofit sector, but bringing the perspective of city building and the other kinds of expertise that planners bring. Among my colleagues, there's a number of engineers trained in a variety of different engineering disciplines, a couple of folks who are economists, and others with more of sort of a geological or environmental background as well. And then, of course, we're supported by a team of awesome fundraising and communication staff who have backgrounds in things like journalism and design. So when we bring those different expertise together, we get some really nice synergies.
Right. And so how does Pembina interact with the different levels of government, federal, provincial, municipal? What do you do? You do a lot of research, and then what happens to those research papers?
Sure, yeah. I would say that the way that we interact with government changes over time and is different on our different subject teams and in our different regions. And so our goal is really supporting stronger policy with respect to energy and related areas in Canada. And so we work with governments in all kinds of ways. So as you mentioned, that could be through conducting research and then providing those perspectives either directly to government or most often publishing them on our website and sharing them with a broader base of stakeholders who all sort of participate in the ecosystem of policy change and program implementation in different ways. And I think that's really something that's maybe important to mention is that, you know, we are successful because we operate in an ecosystem with lots of different actors, that being folks in government, but also folks in the private sector. And we think it's really important to sort of bring together different folks to have conversations and to find innovative ways of piloting things or working together in order to find new ways of doing things.
Right. So let's turn to your area of expertise, transportation. I was surprised to see on the website that transportation is responsible for nearly a quarter of Canada's total emissions. When someone thinks about emissions, they think of agriculture or industry or whatever. So in the context of all the emissions, that GHG emissions, how significant and important is transportation?
Transportation is hugely important. So as you mentioned, it's a quarter of Canadian greenhouse gas emissions. It's actually over a third of greenhouse gas emissions in Ontario. It's about 35%, and that's because we have a quite clean electricity grid, and so transportation makes up an even bigger share of what we're emitting here in Ontario. And you're right, I think sometimes when we picture greenhouse gas emissions, we still sort of picture smokestacks and other things like that. And while that's true, a huge part of where we're emitting, and unfortunately one of the ones that's been the least tackled with climate policy, is really transportation. And when you look at the breakdown of where those emissions are coming from, in the transportation sector as a whole, it's about four-fifths are coming from on-road transportation. So in other words, cars and trucks. And really, it's about the cars and trucks, but it's about the people and the goods that are needing to move around in order to live our lives and in order to sort of contribute to economic growth. And our need to move results in a lot of traffic, and that traffic results in not only greenhouse gas emissions, but air pollution as well. And this is something that's increasingly being recognized, is that traffic-related air pollution, now that we've phased out coal in Ontario, is one of the most important sources of air pollution, specifically what we call NOx and SOx, and as well as fine particulate matter. And these are things that have real health impacts on folks, especially folks living in cities where there's major roads and where sort of residences are close to roadways. So we have an interest in bending down the emissions curve from transportation from a health perspective, as well as a climate perspective, as well as a city building perspective. And so I don't have to tell any of your podcast listeners, I don't think, that congestion is a major problem in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton region. And there are some exciting ways we can sort of tackle the problem of congestion while at the same time looking to tackle the emissions problem.
Right.
Something that I think folks maybe don't hear as often is that within that quarter of Canadian greenhouse gas emissions that are from transportation, right now under half of those are from the movement of goods, but that's the fastest growing component and is actually expected to bypass emissions from passengers by 2030 in Canada. So while we're having a few efficiency gains on the passenger side, that's essentially going to be canceled out by the fact that we're moving more and more goods, and we're moving more and more of them by truck. And that's one of the biggest contributors to our transportation emissions.
So you're saying that in a few years, in a decade or two, there will be more trucks on the road than passenger cars, or at least the emissions from trucks will be greater than passenger cars?
Yeah, the emissions will be greater. The number of vehicles will not be greater. So it depends where you look, but right now, trucks might make up somewhere around 9 or 10% of traffic on the road. So they wouldn't be a majority of vehicles, but they would be contributing a majority of emissions.
Right. So let's delve in a little deeper. We're focusing on the freight traffic, partly because of demand, and that's everybody that wants, you know, something delivered here, there, or whatever, or across country, but also just the way that we transport. So what can we do to help mitigate that before it gets out of hand?
That's a great question. And whether we're thinking about moving goods or thinking about moving people, we really like to kind of think about solutions through the lens of what's sometimes called the sustainable transportation paradigm. So this idea that if you want to address emissions from transportation, you need to avoid those emissions first. It's kind of like the reduce, reuse, recycle mantra, but for transportation. So first you need to look at ways to avoid those emissions. So do all these trips need to be made? Do all these people need to move all this distance, or can we build cities in such a way that they have less far to move? In the case of goods, it's thinking about, what really needs to be shipped. Are there ways to consolidate those goods in different ways? Can we use more local materials in order to reduce the distance that things are traveling? So that's the avoid chunk. Then there's the shift area, which is really about looking at what modes of transportation can be used and looking for opportunities to shift. So in the case of freight, how we move goods, let's say we're moving them by a diesel-fueled truck, could we shift some of those back to rail? Could we shift some of those to bike? And that's actually an area of research that we've been leading here at the Pembina Institute, looking at all the interesting opportunities to move goods by bike. And we've been looking at Toronto in particular, but it's applicable in lots of cities, and even seeing things like UPS announcing a pilot for a cargo bike on streets in Toronto, and it's out there right now being used. So there's some really exciting opportunities in sort of the shift category. And then finally, we talk about improving. So in that category comes maybe the things that you might think of first, which is using alternative fuels. So this could be electric vehicles or other sources of fuel that emit less than diesel or gasoline. And that's kind of the third category. And what we need is action in all of those areas. I think we have a tendency sometimes in climate policy to forget about the avoid side, so to forget about this idea that we can also manage demand. And we also need this activity to happen at all levels of government. And I think some of what our research over the last couple of years has revealed is that the thing about freight is that it's sort of the responsibility of every division within government, but there's often not a single owner of freight policy. And so this seems to be true whether you look at the city level, whether you look at the provincial level, and whether you look at the national level. And I mean, it makes sense because goods movement is both a part of economic growth. It's a part of how we use our roads. It's also a part of, environmental policy. And so it seems that many people have a small mandate to work on it, but not a lot of policymakers are really tasked with thinking about freight exclusively. And just speaking from my own experience, being trained in urban planning, this is not something that we learned about at all. And I think it's been sort of off the radar of professional training in a lot of different disciplines. And so something that I think is really exciting is that as we've sort of ramped up our program around freight decarbonization in the last couple of years at the Pembina Institute, we've really seen that the narrative around that is starting to change, and that folks are starting to turn their attention to freight, both because of the emissions challenge and also because of the city building challenge. So increasingly, it's really hard for delivery companies to make deliveries in dense urban environments where there's a lot of congestion, where they're hit with parking tickets all the time. And so there are some interesting challenges at the local level to address, and then all the way up to sort of the federal government level, thinking about broad strokes policies on fuels and on truck retrofits and other things at that level. So there's a lot of work to be done, but there's a lot underway as well, and it's been really interesting to uncover some of that in the research that we've done.
And what's the response of the trucking industry to some of your reports?
The trucking industry is going to be a really important stakeholder in all of this, and in fact a leader in a lot of ways. And what we hear from industry is really that, you know, they see that policy is changing, they see that the cost of fuels are changing, and they are, you know, sort of on the front lines of being impacted by a lot of these new technological trends. So things like e-commerce that are really changing the way that goods are moving around cities, things like battery electric trucks becoming more and more viable, things like IT solutions, and just and the sort of demand from folks that they're delivering to do what's called just-in-time delivery. So receivers are reducing the amount of inventory they have, and they're counting on the trucking industry to bring things to their door what they need when they need it. And so what we hear from the trucking industry is that they're really on board with adapting to these new realities, and they see big opportunities in it, and for them it really does come down to cost. There are, you know, small profit margins in this industry, and a struggle, I think, is that it's moving so fast that there are a number of technologies and approaches that are available, but there's some support needed in terms of sifting through those different technologies and logistical solutions to the ones that are really going to work and have a real business case for industry so that they can adopt them with confidence. So we see a lot of opportunity here to kind of work with the trucking industry and with government and with other actors in order to find some interesting solutions that we can be confident are going to be the right ones moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the topics that you've mentioned just briefly, you've also mentioned in a blog that was issued March on the Pembina website. But what other studies have been conducted over the years? There's been a lot of research in this area. So give us an idea what's been done by Pembina to study this issue.
Sure, I can do that. And I can talk a little bit about some of the other exciting studies that are out there that our other sort of stakeholders in the ecosystem have put out. But one of our sort of landmark pieces that anyone who's interested in learning about freight in Canada might want to check out is called The State of Freight. And we published this early last year. It's available on our website. And this is really sort of our foundational piece, laying out some of the stats that I've mentioned, but lots of others as well, in terms of what does the trucking industry look like in Canada? Where are different emissions coming from? What are the future projections, and what are the different policies that different levels of government already have in place? So that's kind of our foundational piece. We've been doing some work sort of at the provincial and municipal levels here in Ontario as well. So last summer, we surveyed a pretty big sample of municipalities to ask them to what extent they had freight policies in place and resources behind looking to do local freight planning. And the results of that were quite mixed. So at a broad level, we found that about half of the municipalities that we surveyed had some form of freight policy in their official plan. But this can really vary from, you know, sort of high-level wording all the way down to actually having programs or pilots or industry collaborations in place. And what we heard from municipalities here is that they felt like there was a big role for the province to play in terms of helping them coordinate, helping them harmonize bylaws, and helping them access data. And this is something that comes up over and over again in all of our discussions around freight, is that while we collect some data at the provincial level through the Ministry of Transportation, there's a lot that we just don't know in terms of what kinds of trucks are on the road, where are they moving to and from, what are they carrying, and the more we can start collecting and having open data available, the more we'll be able to make good policy. And another big challenge here is that a lot of companies collect their own data, and this is quite valuable, but for obvious reasons, they're not just going to share that with anyone because it's sort of part of their it's part of how they, you know, plan their operations and remain competitive. And so I think there's some opportunities here to form partnerships where it would be, industry could consider sharing data with third parties that would help sort of pull out learnings and inform policy. So that piece on local freight planning is another one that we have out. And then just the final one that I'll mention is we did do research last year as well on the potential for moving goods by bike in Toronto. And we think that as streets get even more congested and as we look for sort of different ways to use urban space, there's a real potential for low carbon delivery by typically electric assist cargo bike. We see this as something that's really taken off in many European jurisdictions, and we're really excited to be looking at how this could happen here. In order to do that, we'd need to think too about delivery hubs and how goods could be sort of stockpiled around the city. And this is something we're excited to be looking into, and I'll actually be at the National Bike Summit in Ottawa early next week talking about some of this research as well.
Right. Very extensive. But that's not all that Pembina does. You've got focuses on climate policy, green buildings, oil and gas, clean electricity. Any of those you want to mention?
It would be better to speak to some of my colleagues about that work, just because that's not something we lead in our office. But one thing I could mention just within our transportation team is that we're not only working on freight, so we have a whole priority area as well around city building as it relates to transportation. So really looking for ways, particularly focusing on the greater Toronto and Hamilton region, for matching land use to transportation in order to really give folks choices to move around the region in ways that are not a personal car, and to make sure that the communities that we're building now are going to help us adapt to low carbon futures. The population growth that's projected for the DTHA is pretty significant. We're expecting about 50% more people in the region between now and 2041. And so we need to find ways to accommodate this population growth in a way that is going to not contribute to just more cars on the road and more emissions from transportation. So we've done lots of work sort of supporting and informing the policies that are in, for example, the regional transportation plan for Metrolinx, and we're doing some work right now talking with different stakeholders in the region about really what are the tools to generating transit supportive development and to building complete communities around these new transit investments, which is something that's enshrined in policy and that we're interested in seeing, you know, on a practical level, how can that happen on the ground. So that's some of the other work that we're doing on our team. And certainly, yeah, I would invite your listeners to check out our website for all of the different subject areas that we have as well. There's all the ones you mentioned, and I would just add we also have a team that works exclusively on federal policy, so all the different climate initiatives happening federally and sort of the main focus of that has been on the development and implementation of what's called the Pan-Canadian Climate Framework, which is sort of the Marque legislation or policy that speaks to what the federal government, along with the provinces and territories, have committed to doing nationally on climate. And we think this is a really important tool for reaching our climate targets as well.
Right. And Pembina's got a great reputation, as I said before, excellent reports and research and a good relationship with other stakeholders. You mentioned the trucking industry, for example. I believe that Pembina has a good relationship with everybody that they interact with and is seen as a fair trader. You don't really have a hidden agenda that maybe some other environmental groups do, but you are open to all information and put out a very balanced set of reports.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure I would say that other environmental groups might have hidden agendas, but certainly one of our approaches to sort of having influence and generating the policy change that we think is the right way to go is really working with others and also supporting others in the work that they are doing and recognizing that we can't do it all alone and that it's going to take sort of efforts across the spectrum to move in the direction that we need to go.
Very diplomatically said. Thank you very much. I've been speaking with Lindsay Wigginton from Pembina, and we'll put up the URL for the website, pembina.org. Lindsay, thank you very much for joining us on Earth Matters.
Thanks so much for the invite, Lawson. It was great to talk to you.
Okay.